holding the Haggadah and the Ketta, Baruch She Shomer Haftachato Yisrael Baruch Hu. Hashem keeps his promise to Yisrael. Shekodesh Baruch Hu Hishav Esekates. Lasos Kamo Sheamar L'Avram Avinu Bevris Bein Besarim. Hashem promised Avram Giger Yezarecha Beretz Lo Lahem V'Avadum Binu Osam Arba Miyos Shana V'Gam Esagoy Yashay Avodu Dan Anochi, that they're in the future, the Jewish people are going to be a stranger in a land that's not theirs, and they're going to have to it'll be afflicted. And 400 years, Hashem says that I'm going to judge those, the goyim that afflicted the Jewish people. And then after that comes the next section where we lift up our cause, we say V'hi sham dalavoseinu. So they ask, what's the V'hi sham dalavoseinu? And this is what stood by our forefathers. What's this? So some say, since it's a continuation of what we just said, is that what we just said, that the fact that Kosh Baruch Hu, punished the Mitzrim, etc., and that's what stood by our forefathers, the promise of Hashem. However, Avraham Moshe Schwartz adds a little bit to this, based on something Reb Reuven Karelenstein says. It says, when one says a story and he leaves out the names of the people involved, it says, takes away from the story. The story's not as exciting. You know, it says, so-and-so, you mentioned a person, what happened to whatever, so that's, the story becomes real. You just say, somebody, and you don't really leave out the name. He says, it's not the same. He says, Lahav do we see it by Lashon Hara, right? And that's why, if one says Lashon Hara, he doesn't mention any names, in theory, that's not an Isser Lashon Hara. So if you just say somebody said da-da-da, when you don't know who it's talking about, not really Lashon Hara. Because it's not the real thing. You mention a name, that's real. So he says, points out here, it's interesting that when Hashem spoke to Avram, he left out the names, right? He says, Yadodek, Igeri Yezarcha, Be'eretz Lolahem. Didn't say Mitzrayim, he said, Eretz Lolahem. He left out the name. And Vigames Agoy, Asher Yavodu Dan Onochi. Who's this Goy? Didn't say. And also the nation that's going to afflict, I'm going to punish. Who is the nation? Doesn't say. Leaves out the place, leaves out the people, doesn't say. Why? Was it it's a riddle? So the Rambam asks, why were in fact the Mitzrayim punished when they were just doing what Kadosh Baruch Hu asked, right? Hashem said to Avram, they're going to be enslaved, etc. And so the Mitzrayim are just doing Hashem's ratzon. So why should they be punished? So the answer is, because, as we said, because Hashem did not mention any names, right? If Hashem would have said to Mitzrayim, we're going to do this, and they have, okay, so they said, look, Hashem, you told us we have to do this, we're doing this. But Hashem now can come and say, excuse me, Mitzrayim, I never said you have to do it. I said the nation, I never said which nation. You volunteered, so now you have to suffer for it. I didn't say it has to be you. Fine. So he extends it one step further. And he says, and it didn't only end there. Since Hashem left it blank, it says like a blank check, right? Check patuach. Right? Don't write the name. In other words, Hashem did it dafka that way, so in the future, any nation that comes along and decides to enslave us, they can fit the bill. They can go into that haftacha of a Kodesh, that Hashem said to Avram Avinu, because there was no names there. It says it's the goy and the Eretz Lo Lahem and the goy. So therefore, Lamashal and Hitler, Yimach Shemo, right? He said, "Oh, I'm going to afflict the Jewish people." Okay, now he's writing his name on the check. Okay, you're the one. Fine. So that's Eretz Lo Lahem, Germany, etc., Europe, and the goy Asher Yavaru Dano Nachi. Fine. So now he's going to be punished. So any goy in the history who comes along and wants to afflict us, they now put their name on the check, right? The Kodesh Baruch Hu left open when he gave it to Avraham Avinu. The Mei says, very nice, that's the V'hi Sham Dalavoseinu. Shebechol Dor V'Dor Amdim L'Chaloseinu V'Kodesh Baruch Hu Matzilim Mi'Adam. Why? Because what's the V'hi Sham that it stood by us? That Hashem promised Avraham without any names. Had Hashem put a name, it's written, that would have been the end of it. The check's written. But now it's written without a name, so that's V'hi Sham Dalavoseinu. So in every generation that the Goy tries to afflict that, Hashem said, fine, you're now putting it now. I can punish you. That's the V'hi Sham. So right after we finish the words Vaten Leisavitz Ar Seir, Lareshas also, Yaakov, Avanav Yadu Mitzrayim, etc. And then we raise the kos and we say Vihishamda. So he says, it's a pella. Why? Because when we're lifting up the kos, b'simcha, right? So we lift the kos. Ah, v'hisham dal avasein. It's a little bit the wrong place, you know. What are we saying? V'hisham dal avasein v'lanu, shalo achad bilvad, omdim aleinu l'chaloseinu, every generation they want to wipe us out. Ah, this is so amazing, and pick up the kos, Hashem, every generation they want to wipe us out. Why do we be lifting up the kos now? If you want to, lift it up at the end of the ketah, because Kadosh Baruch Hu matzi leinu miyadav. So it should said, raise the kos before the last word, and said, Kadosh Baruch Hu matzi leinu. Fine. Why are we raising up the kos at the beginning? We're mentioning how every generation want to wipe us out. It's the wrong time to lift up the kos and be happy. So he answers, is this Rechiel Meir Tzuker? He answered with the following mashal. He says that there was once a very poor man, and he had lived in some shack, you know, that he couldn't afford that even, so he had to rent it. It was on rental. And what happened? One day, his father-in-law decides to give him a present. He says, you know, I bought you a house. You know, you're living on rent. You rent the whole time. You should have your own place. So he bought him his own place. So he moves in. The new house was no great shakes either. There was also another shack. Okay, another rundown place. The roof was leaking and that. All no story. But, okay, but at least it was his. You know, before it was rental, now it's his shack. So fine. So he moves in. And what happens? Notices the first night there already, he hears some noises or whatever, and he quickly gets up and he runs and down, you know, runs to the front door, and he sees that there is some ganavim that they're trying to break in. So he chases them away, screams at them, and they run away. He says, okay, fine, you know, good thing he caught them, whatever. So, not that there's anything to steal, really, but whatever, okay, so he chases them away. Fine, goes back to sleep. Next night, again he hears noises. Goes, runs to the window, whatever, and he sees some other ganavim also trying to break in. He says, what's going on over here? He chases them away. Fine. Goes to sleep. Next night, same thing. Third night in a row, another ganavim trying to break in. So he says, what is going on over here? So he starts making a cheshbon, and he says, wait a minute, like, you know, what do I have to steal? I mean, I'm a poor man, a shack, you know. But every night, other ganavim are trying. It must be that there's some, right, there must be some hidden treasure over here that I don't know about. Because why would they, everybody trying to be breaking into this house? What's so special about this shack? You know, it must be there's something hidden here that I don't know about. So he says, Nimsho, says there's billions of, the Chazanish used to say, you know, there's billions of people in the world, and yet everybody is interested in us, this little tiny, you know, tiny little country on the map, you can barely see on the map, and 90% of the discussions in the United Nations about this country is like a little pits of nothing. I remember I heard once that they asked somebody who didn't know about the, you know, anything about geography, and they said to him, I'm going to give you a map and no names on the map, and I want you to point out which country do you think is Israel. So he showed him the map, and he said, okay, and he point must be this country. What did he point to? Russia. Right? He says, well, there's so much talk about it. It must be this huge, big country over here. And the guy, no, it's this little. You see, take your magnifying glass. That little, that's his. He said, what's pshat? You know, we're so. So, LMI, it's that the Goyim realize that we are a treasure. Right? That they're, and therefore they're trying to, you know, rob us of the treasure. They realize that the chashivas of Klal Yisrael. Mimela, he says, that's why we say that the Yaakov went to Mitzrayim, we sing, Shebechol Dor V'Ramdim Lo L'Chaloseinu. Why? Because the etzim fact that they want to wipe us out, why do they care about us? We're nothing. Elamai, we're obviously not nothing. That's the biggest Zariah, that we're a big treasure. And therefore, we're singing, Bishamda, that, Baruch Hashem, we're a huge treasure. What's the riot of that? Shebechol Dor V'Ramdim Lo L'Chaloseinu. What are they interested about us for? Must be, we're Chashiv. That's what we have to sing about. Yeah. Okay. Next we say, Tzeul mad ma bikesh lavan aramila sos li Yaakov avinu, shaparu lo gozer ala zcharim, and lavan bikesh la kor es akol. So they ask, Forshim ask, where do we see that Lavan wanted to lakor et akol? Right? Very difficult. It doesn't say anywhere in the Torah that Laban tried to kill Yaakov or something. Right? It doesn't say that. So what's Pshat Allah? He wants to lakor at the kol. Says a very nice Pshat. Rav Goel El Karif says the following. He says, what's Pshat? That he wanted to lakor at the kol. Not by physically killing Yaakov. No. He wanted to spiritually, right? Ruchani wanted to destroy Yaakov. Destroy the Torah. He says, where do we see that? We see that with the famous Rashi, right? It says, Yimlevan Garti. Right, Garti is Gematria Taryag. So Yaakovin was saying in Lavan Garti, Vetaryag Mitzvah Shamarati, Velol Amanti Masim Arayim. Meaning what? So we see from here that Lavan tried to make Yaakov not keep the Torah, and therefore Yaakov said, no, he wasn't successful. Even though I was with Lavan and he wanted me to take me away from the Torah, no, I kept the whole Torah and I didn't learn from his bad ways. So we see from that that was the goal of Lavan, to take Yaakov away from the Torah. Now, how did he plan to do this? So, for example, he says, what did he do? He switched Leah with Rachel. Right, so here, and so he was supposed to marry Rachel, and he switches and gives him Leah. What was what was Lavan hoping? The Yaakovinu would naturally get very upset and lose his temper and kas, and then great, he's his midos. I'm getting at his midos. I'm bringing out bad midos over there of kas. You see, whatever. And then afterwards, Lavan says to him, okay, fine, here I'll give you Rachel also, but you have to work another 7 years. Right, hoping that what's going to be, then he's going to work. He said, yeah, not necessarily he's going to work, but he's not going to really, he's going to leave early every day, not really put in a full day of work. Why? Because I said, well, this guy's cheated me, why should I be nice to him, and whatever. And that's exactly what Lavan attempted to do, so that Yaakov Avinu he'll get angry, and then not work properly. And as we say, mitzvah vera govera gerera severa, one thing will lead to the next, until he says he'll become like one of us. He'll just have bad midos, and then fine, he'll have his 12 children or whatever, but it'll be just like your average mishpacha, with a large mishpacha, but very average mishpacha, but nobody special. So that's what Lavan wanted to lakor at the kol. In the end, of course, we know Yaakov kept his cool, and he worked hard, and he didn't let Lavan break him in his midos and his hanhagas, and he kept the Torah, Tariq Mitzvah Shamarti. Mele, he was not able to okera sakol, which Lavan attempted to do. Try. Okay. It says Darshan the Psukim, Vayered Mitzrayim Anusa Piyadibur, Chule, and we say Bimatei Me'at K'mashin Emar B'Shibim Nefesh Vayhi Sham Lagoy Milamed Shayu Yisrael Mitzuyanim Sham. We say that V'Sham Lagoy that we were Mitzuyanim, Lashon like Mitzuyan, we were excellent. But Chazal Darshan, one of the things that they were special, or Mutsuyanim, was that they didn't change their names. That's what was special. Didn't change, we'll see, their clothing. Didn't change their names. So he says, what's the, for instance, from Yehuda Tzadka, what's the connection between the Geula and not changing their names? And changing their names, so what? So he brings it to Lamaisa. He says that one of the reasons why we left, we're supposed to be 400 years in Mitzrayim. Why did we leave early after 210? Is because we had a lot of people and we worked very hard. So the amount of work that would normally take 400 years, since we had a lot of people and we worked very hard, we were able to do all that work, and that affliction, was narrowed down to, we were able to do in 210 years, and that's why we got out early. So he says, if the Jews wouldn't have kept their names, meaning what would they have done? They would have wanted to assimilate, have Egyptian names or whatever, and they'd be mixing in with the Egyptians. That would be very nice. They might, not have to, work as hard or whatever, or nor work at all. But on the other hand, the same token, Hashem's said, look, I can't take you out early now. You know, if you keep your who you were and you stay Jewish and they know it, then they'd work you hard. I can, like, get you out early after 210 years. But if you're going to become like a goy and they're not going to work you because they're going to think you're one of them, so then you're going to have to stay in Mitzrayim for 400 years. So it ends up that them keeping their names and remaining Jewish, that's what got them out early. That was that brought the Geula. Similarly, as we said, Mitzuyanim also relates to their clothing, right? That they kept their Jewish clothing. So Rav Yaakov Galinsky, that's all he asked, says, we know that the Jews in Mitzrayim, they worship the Avodah Zarah, right? Halalu of the Avodah Zarah. They worship the Avodah Zarah. And the Mechal Shabbos, whatever, on the 49th level of Tumah. So he says, you know, he said, what is it, Doma too? He says, can you imagine, you see a guy, a Bachar, he's wearing, you know, his black pants, white shirt, you know, jacket, black hat, whatever. And he's Mechal Shabbos. He's, you know, riding this, going on the bus, whatever, on Shabbos. We'd say, well, how could you do that? You know, he said, you're embarrassment to the Jew. But, you know, how could you, Mechal Shabbos, and then while you're wearing a black rocking around, you're a hypocrite, you know. And yet over here, we say, you know, it's a very good, you know, they're Mitzuyanim Sham, the Jewish people, they didn't change their clothing. But they didn't change their clothing, but they're Mechal Shabbos, over the Avodah Zarah, didn't change, it's better to change their clothing, you shouldn't be such a hypocritical like that. It's Tzvuim, you know. They were wearing their Yiddish garb, and they're acting like a guy. Better they shouldn't dress like that. Yet we're praised, oh, Mitzuyanim Sham, what's the godless? So he says, we see from here the Cheshivas of, they call this, he's gabrus, which is like self-control, it gaber, right? You know, how it's a tremendous mida, very chashiv, a person to be able to overcome his natural instincts and to do what's right, even though it's not what he, it's easy or what he wants to do, but he overcomes, he has self-control. So he said that's what they displayed in Mitzrayim, right? Here, the Mitzrayim, they all dressed like, you know, Mitzrayim, whatever. And naturally speaking, that's how human nature is. You want to go with the flow. Oh, I want to dress like them and be like them, whatever. That's the way people are. But their godless was, they said, no, we're not going to be like them. We have a desire to do so. No, we're going to have self-control. We're going to overcome this. And we're going to dress like a Yid, even so. And that was a tremendous, tremendous thing. Even though they find they devote as art, it was terrible, but they displayed self-control. That's a tremendous mila. And as we saw, that's what led to their geula. He says, really, the whole essence of Chag HaPesach is this. He says, his controlling oneself, overcoming one's tendency, etc. His Yetzer, his Taivas. He said, you can't eat what you want to eat. You know, I want to eat my pizza, I want to eat my this, I want to eat my that. No, you can't just do what you want. You have to control yourself. No, you have to eat what the Torah says this week, out of Pesach. And at the Seder, you know, how you eat. No, you can't eat it. You have to lie down on the side and you start eating and you say, no, hurry up. You know, you have 2 minutes. You know, what are you doing? You know, you can't just do what you want to do. You're in control. You have to control yourself. You know, how you eat, how much you eat, when you eat. That so it's old Chag presents this idea of self control. Brings here a very, very interesting story. Talks about not changing one's clothing. Brings a story that starts in Venezuela, in South America. So there was a Bachar Yeshiva who learned in Lakewood, and he was from Venezuela. So once he was back home, he made sure when he was home, he stayed with his clothing. You know, he dressed like Yeshiva Bach, even though he was in a place where there were Yidden, but nobody dressed like Yeshiva Bach over there. Anyways, one day he's walking, you know, with hat and jacket, whatever, he's in the street, and he bumps into a Yid, another boy, and says, oh boy, you're dressed strange, you know, why are you dressed like this? So he says, well, I learn in yeshiva. He says, what's yeshiva? You know, I knew nothing about Yiddishkeit, this other boy. And so he explained to him a little bit about yeshiva. He says, so why do you dress like this, though? So he says, because, you know, we're special, Yid is the son of the king, of the Melech Machim Lachim, and therefore the son of the king has to dress respectfully. Says, for example, he said the president of the United States. You know, how is he going to walk around like a schlepper? No, he wears a nice suit and tie, whatever. Why? Because he's chashev, right? So chashev people have to dress accordingly, and we're chashev. We learned the Hashem's Torah, whatever. We're chashev, therefore we have to dress like that. So he says, that's interesting. He says, where exactly do you learn? Where's your yeshiva? So it says in Lakewood. So the boy was taken aback so much. He said, you know what? He says, I want to go also. I want to go there. I want to check it out. You got my interest up. I want to check out this yeshiva in Lakewood. So he says, you know, please, you know, my plate, I'll help you, whatever. Okay, so sure enough, this other young man, gets he has a visa and this and that, whatever, and he makes his way to America to go to Lake, to the yeshiva. So he arrives in America, and at the border control, they saw that his visa was expired. Didn't realize it, but his visa was expired, and they said they were choshed him that he's trying to sneak into the country. You know, so they said, nothing doing. They treat him very, harshly. And they called the police. And this big Schwarze policeman, so he takes him in custody. He says, here. And he puts him in his car. And he says, you know, he's taking him to wherever it is to send him back home. So while he's in the car, in the police car, so he says, he says to the boy, why did you come to America for? So he says, I came to go to yeshiva. So the Schweitzer says, the policeman says, you're going to yeshiva? So he puts on the brakes, turns the car around, and he starts driving in the other direction. So the boy's like, where exactly are we going? So he said, I know a lawyer that you pay him $1,000 and he'll give you a visa right on the spot. So he drives to this lawyer. He says, here, he lives in the city, whatever. The bacher goes up, gets the visa on the spot, comes back down. The cop car is waiting for him. He says, here, get in. And he says, now I'm going to take you to the train. I'll tell you exactly where to go, and then you can go to your Lakewood, to the yeshiva. So the boy says, what's going on over here? What happened? You know, one minute you're kicking me out of the country, right? Next minute you turn around the car and you help me get a visa and you send me off to the yeshiva. He goes, what's going on? I don't understand it. So the policeman says, I'll tell you. Listen to this story. So he says, the policeman says, my wife, there was old some people tried to get her into trouble. Yeah, it was a libel, and they somehow had it that made a scenario where my wife had to pay $2,000, and we didn't have $2,000, so they put my wife in jail. So I couldn't I had to get $2,000 to get my wife out of jail. They got her into jail. So one day, he says, I'm walking on the street, and I see this chassid, this Satmar chassid, walking out of a store with like a briefcase or whatever, and this hoodlum, whatever, comes along and grabs the suitcase from him and starts running off. So this chassid is like running out, hey, stop, you know, screaming for help, and then starts running after him. But he couldn't catch him. The guy was much faster than him. But being a policeman, you know, I'm in good shape. So I ran after the guy, the gunner, and I caught up to him, I grabbed him, pushed him to the ground or whatever, and called the police car, and he was taken away. And, of course, I got back the briefcase, and I gave it back to this chassid. So the chassid says to me, you know, well, thank you so much, you know, you saved me, you know. He says, no, it's nothing, it's, you know, it's part of my line of duty, you know, I'm a policeman, that's what I do. So he says, I really want to, you know, pay you something for, you know, helping me out. You really, mama, saved me. It was a lot of money here in this briefcase, and you, the policeman says, well, if you really want to help, he says, I do have a little bit of a problem. He says, my wife's in jail, and the only way of getting her out is if I have $2,000. I don't have the money. And so he goes, oh, please. So he opens the thing, gives them $2,000, and he says, here. So now the policeman says, well, how can I ever thank you? You know, I owe you, mama, save my, you know, wife, get her out of prison. What can I do to thank you? Show my thanks. So he said nothing. You know, he says, please, something. He says, okay, I'll tell you what. He says, do me a favor. He says, anytime you see a yid that needs help, he says, you help him. So he says, what does that mean, needs help? So he said, fine. He says, you want to be more specific? If you see, find a yid that wants to go to yeshiva, so help him out. He says, okay. So he tells the boy, so that's the story. He says, for the last 10 years, I've been waiting for an opportunity of bumping into some young man that wants to go to yeshiva. And nothing, last 10 years since the story happened, never heard anything. All of a sudden, here I am taking you, you know, to send you out of the country and asking you what you're here for. You're going to yeshiva. He says, oh, yeshiva, help us. I promised this policeman, you know, I promised, you know, that I could help some of this. I promised this chassid that help a goy go to yeshiva. So that's why I'm helping you to yeshiva. Well, Maisa, it's all, where did it all stem from? Shayu Mitzianim Sham, right? That this boy in Venezuela was dressed in his hat and jacket. It caused this boy to be able to, this other boy to be able to come to yeshiva. And nowadays, says at the end, he's living in Yerushalayim and Avreich with children and following the Derech HaTorah. It was all because of this first bachur that was careful to wear his hat and jacket, even in Venezuela. V'yavidu Mitzrayim es b'nei Yisrael b'farach. So there's an interesting medrash which needs explaining here. It says, Chazal tells Midrash Rabbah, beginning of Shmos, it says, Ra'a masoi gadol al katan, u'masei katan al gadol. So the Moshe Rabbeinu, he went out to see the Yarbasiv Losam. He went to see the afflictions of the Jewish people. And he noticed the following. He saw a masui gadol, a big heavy load, that was on a little person that can hardly carry it. Umasi katon al gadol. And a little pekala, something light thing, was on a big person. And similarly, masui ish al isha, umasi isha al ish. And load that's made for a man, a woman's carrying, a woman, a man was carrying. Zakein al masui zakein al bachur, masui bachur al zakein. Similarly, a heavy load which a bachur could carry, that was on a zakein, an old man, he could hardly carry it. And when a zakein would normally carry was on the bach. Vayamaniach dargon shalom, and Moshe put down his darga that where he was holding. Veholech miyashev lahem sivlosehem. Veosek kilu misai lefaro. And what was he doing? He pretended he kilu was helping Pharaoh, but what he did was he equalized, you know, the loads and the way they should be. So he asked the obvious question. He says, I can understand, you know, Paro wanted to, you know, cause the avidu v'farech, you know, this hard labor, and he wants to put, let's say, by this old man and put this heavy load on this old man. Fine. Or the load that a bachur can only, you know, carry on the old man. Fine. But he says, what was he accomplishing by doing the other thing? Taking a load that was for a weak man and putting it on the strong man, on the zakein, and putting it on the bachur. That doesn't make any sense. So the heavy load that goes on the bachur, on the old man, yeah, that's the parach. But where's the parach of putting a light load that would normally go on the zakein and putting that on the bachur? Why is that? What's the parach over there? So he answers that, since a yid, we have a heart, right? We care about our fellow man. So a mele, that itself answers the question. And imagine, he says, this bacher, that fine, he's given this light load, but he's walking next to this zakein carrying this heavy load, and his heart is breaking. He says, he feels terrible. He says, I'm carrying this nothing, somebody, and he's carrying this heavy load. It should be the opposite, right? I feel terrible for him. This old man carrying this heavy load. I should be carrying that heavy load. He should be carrying this light thing. So that itself affected him so much, it itself is befarach. Because he saw his fellow Yid having to suffer, that's as if he himself is suffering. Because that's the way a Yid is. So that was the, that was that, and Pharaoh knew this, the way we are, and Mela caused the tsar in both directions until Moshe Rabbeinu came and helped the situation. As we said, Vayavim Mitzrayim is Meisho Befarach. So Chazal Darshan Beperach. Right, the Perach is Lashon Perach with a soft mouth. There's different Perushim on that. The Adiras Eliyahu says something nice. It says there's two Psukim, they're similar. One's in Tilim, one's in Divrei Yamim. In Tilim, it says Asher Karasis Avraham Ushuaso LeYishak. It doesn't say Yitzchak, it says Yishak with a sin. And that's in Tilim. And similarly, almost the same pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, it says Asher Kares es Avram Ushvaso LeYitzchak. Here it's with a tzadi. So one place is Yishak and one's a Yitzchak. So the Deretz Eliyahu says the following: Yitzchak in Gemak Pi Yitzchak, as it says in the pasuk, Yitzchak is Gematria 210. And B'Yishak is 420. Meaning that Paro, he wanted to enslave the Jews for 420 years. Like Yishak, right? B'Yishak, which is 420. But the Kodesh Baruch Hu said, no, that's enough only B'Yishak, right? Which is 210 years. That's how long they were in Mitzrayim, Lemaisa. And he said, what's the difference between these two letters? Yitzchak is soft, right? Yis is a soft sound. Whereas Yitzchak is a very harsh sound. So Paro's idea was, not such harsh, servitude. And this way, they'll be able to be under my control for 420 years. Yitzchak, soft, Yitzchak, perach. But along came Hashem and said, no, that's not what's going to happen over here. He's going to work them hard, and that's going to allow them to leave after 210 years. Yes, there's B'Yitzchak with a harsh tone, which is the harsh Shibut, and that allowed them to leave B'Yitzchak in 210 instead of 420. Okay, it's a very interesting idea here from Rav Yerachmiel Kram. So there's on the pasuk v'yamas melech Mitzrayim v'yanchu b'nei Yisrael min avodah. So literally it says that the melech Mitzrayim died, and the b'nei Yisrael, they groaned, from the avodah. See, that's an interesting question. It says the Chazal tell us that it doesn't really mean v'yamas melech that he actually died. What does it mean? It means he became a leper. He had leprosy. Okay, it's haras. That's what it means. Mitzora is chashuv kameis. So therefore, v'yamas melech Mitzrayim doesn't mean that he died. It means that Paro got leprosy. And because, as we mentioned earlier, Shirim, what happened? Then he thought that the cure for his leprosy is he has to bathe in the blood of the Jewish children. So he would check 150 children in the morning and 150 children in the evening and bathe in the blood of the Jewish people to cure his leprosy. Fine. The only problem is the pasuk. So if you were to continue the pasuk, v'yamas melech Mitzrayim means he had leprosy. V'yanchu b'nei Yisrael, and after that happened, so b'nei Yisrael, they groaned, they cried out. From what? Min ha shechita. Oh, you're going to say whatever, right? From the killing of their children. So what does it say in the pasuk? Min avodah, that's why they're crying, because they're working hard. Their kids are being shechted, so why is it saying they cried out from the avodah? So they just be cried out because their kids are being shechted. So he says, Gevaltik Vor. He says that when a Yid finds his children that are taken away from him, whether it be physically, whether it be spiritually, says it's... it takes away their whole tom in life. In other words, even though it might be difficult, life might be difficult, you have parnasa, you have this, you have that, whatever, but as long as you have good children, you have the children, you have good children, so Mele, you're able to handle the difficulties in life. He says that's, in Galus, we see, the Goyim are pursuing us, and we have trouble with Parnassa, working on Shabbat, whatever it might be, during our life in Galus. So what was the Nechama? At least a Yid, when he comes home, and he has his child that's with him, and is following in his ways, and keeping the Torah. So now we can get by. Now he can handle the difficulties in life. As opposed to the opposite, he says, "Chalilim lo olchim ha'yeladim b'derech ha'Torah, u'kasher hem pashud nilkachim mi'areihem." Then it takes nilkachim mi'em nechamato yichida u'ksheye ha'chaim tzafim v'olim b'chol takfam. And therefore, once the it's taken away from them, and the children are following the Torah, the Mele, then what they can normally handle, the difficulties in life are now become impossible. They can't handle it anymore. So the children are the nechama. The Mele says, very nice. Now the pasuk is very good. But Yamas Melech Mitzrayim, he had leprosy. Mele took the children away from them. They took away the yid's nechama. So if at least they had the nechama of their children, they can handle the avoda. But now they don't have their children. Now the avoda, as difficult as it was, okay, but they can handle it because at least they come home to their children. Now they took away the children from them. So now that avoda which they could normally handle, now they can't handle it anymore because their children are taken away from them. Okay.